Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Chav Chet of Sefer Yechezkel, chapter 28 of the book of Yechezkel. And if in the past couple of chapters we have been speaking about the downfall of Tzor the city, and Tzor the civilization or the society, in today's Perek, Yechezkel is told to turn his attention to the king of Tzor in particular. So that's already an interesting point to make, that the king of Tzor will be blamed or will have a punishment assigned to him, somewhat independent of, not independent of in terms of what will happen, but independent of in terms of the reasons for his downfall that are going to be separate from the city itself. So from the city we've seen the emphasis on there being merchants and there being the center of the world and they're taking themselves seriously in that way. We will see something slightly different for the king of Tzor for the first half of the parak. So, Pasuk Aleph, Vahidvar Hashem, Elai Neymor, Ben Adam, Emor Leniki Tzor, Ko Amar Hashem Elohim, Yan Gavali Becha, Vatomer El Ani, Moshav Elohim, Yashav Tibulei Famim, Vata Adam Velo El, Vatili Becha, Kilev Elohim. So, he says, to Yechezkel Ben Adam, say to the head of Tzor, the ruler of Tzor, this is what Hashem says to you, since your heart grew so great and you said, I am a god, and I sit in the place of the gods, in the center of the seas, when you're in fact a person and not Hashem, and not a god, and you made your heart like the heart of God, meaning you thought well of yourself, and you thought so highly of yourself in these terms. So this is a striking opening, because it lays out exactly what the king of Tzor and what the leadership of Tzor was thinking about itself. And in terms of God, you have to mean, you might take it to mean literally a god in the pagan sense of he thinks people should bow down to him. But if you wanted to apply it to modern times, whether this is true of the king of Tzor specifically or not, it might also just be that you think that you are the source of your power, and you are self-sufficient in that way. There is nothing, no power above you. Meaning, we always think that, I think some people commonly think, or often think, the definition of idolatry, or worshipping other gods, is to think of something and say, use the word God, or use the word power of the universe. But it's not clear that it's not equally offensive just to say, well, I'm self-sufficient, or I'm as sufficient as anybody can get. So if somebody today were to say, well, it's all nature, and whatever nature says is what happens, and whatever genetics, and this, and it's all science, so I'm not sure that that's not, in the sense that Hashem is complaining about Nevi'im, I'm not sure that that too is not, becomes a kind of a god. So here too, as long as the king of Tzor thinks that he has all the power that he could have, that anybody could have, that there are no other sources of power, it might be sufficient. Part of what leads me to think that is the reactions of a couple of sources. First, there's a Tosfos in Bava Kama on Daf Lamed Chet Amud Aleph. So it points out that the word Adam is an interesting word to use, because there is tradition elsewhere that Tanakh generally refers to the Jewish people as Adam, with that term Adam, and not to non-Jews. It's for that reason that we think that a non-Jewish corpse would not create what we call Tumat Ohel. In Jewish cases, if you're in the same room, or if you are covered over by the same covering, whatever the halachot are, with a person, a Jewish person who's passed away, so that creates ritual impurity. That's the reason that the kohanim, that priests who are, that male priests, who are prohibited from becoming tamei lameit, so if, rachmana litzlan, if God forbid somebody passes away, they need to leave the room. Even though they're not going to come into any physical contact with the person that's passed away, it's because in the case of Jews who pass away, the room itself transfers tumma from one place to another. We generally say that's not true about non-Jews, and the source verse for that idea that is not true about non-Jews is one that refers to it as that this whole halacha refers to this whole halacha as depending on being an Adam, and the Gemara says Jews are called Adam and not non-Jews. Problem is, here in our pasuk, Hashem turns to the king of Tzar, and he says to him that you're an Adam. So Tosus points out that that rule, that Jews aren't referred, that only Jews are referred to as Adam in Tanakh, only applies when there's not a direct contrast to Hashem. So if in this context what we mean by the word Adam is some kind of an expression of honor or of achievement, if that's what the word Adam means, it means you've reached the level of Adam, and Adam is the level, whatever that would be, that would be a whole different discussion. So then when the Pasuk directly contrasts Adam to Hashem, then it's clear that that's not the version of Adam that we mean. We mean it the other way. This is particularly relevant to the book of Yechezkel, because Yechezkel, we've noticed before, is always referred to Hashem by Hashem calls him, or by whoever giving him the nevuah, by meaning the Rambam talks about Ishim, whatever Malach is talking to him, or whatever is the source of his nevuah is, always or often calls him Ben Adam. So that can either be seen as an uplifting statement, it's trying to say to him, you are a Ben Adam, or it could be saying, you're only an Adam, you're only a Ben Adam, don't think so much of yourself. So here I think we see both of those. Right, we see that in halacha, we think the term Adam transfers halachic dignity, and yet at the same time, here, when it's specifically contrasted to Hashem, it is meant as a limitation on one's power and strength and importance. And then there's Gemara in Chulin Daf Peitet Amud Aleph, which says that Hashem says to the Jewish people, you know, I like you better than the non-Jews. And the reason is what's important. It's not the fact that's important. The reason is, he says, because even when I give you greatness, you declare yourself to be small and relatively insignificant. He gives an example. When Hashem tells Avraham he's great, Avraham says, Vanochi Afar Va'efa, this is a stone. Avraham knows he's already great, knows he's already got a great future predicted, and he says, and I am Afar Va'efa. And Moshe and Aaron, when the Jews attack them, they say, Vanachnuma, even though they've just led the people out of Egypt, the strongest nation on earth, they say, and who were we? And David HaMelech says, Vanochi Tolad Velo Ish, I'm a worm and not a human being. And the non-Jews, the Gemara goes on to say, don't do that. Nimrod, the Gemara thinks that Nimrod was part of the original Tower of Babel, and he was part of that idea. Paro, when they come to him, says, who's this God that I should listen to? And in our case now, Hiram Melech Tzor says, Moshav Elokim Yashavti B'Lev Yamim, I live in a place of the gods, in the center of the sea. So what the Pasuk seems to be saying is that the flaw in Tzor, and the king of Tzor here, that is, who's being addressed now by Yechezkel, is that he takes the goodness that he has and he sees it as a function of himself. And that is a crucial spiritual, religious flaw that Yechezkel is being sent to tell him is what's going to be the source of his downfall. So that's a crucial thing, I think, to watch and to see in the age in which we live, because I think we see that all around us among various peoples, that the many remarkable accomplishments that we actually have among people around us in various fields of endeavor are all too often taking those extra steps to be seen as, and this is all there is, and this is all we need to know. So you have brilliant people doing brilliant things, and then they go that step too far, and I think that's a point where Jews need to, from the sources of Tanakh, realize that these are old mistakes, and they're old mistakes that we need to be aware of and we need to be on the alert for, and not to absorb as part of our understanding and vision of the world. So Hashem says to him in Pasuk Gimel, Daniel kol satum lo amamucha, are you smarter than Daniel so that all no hidden thing is clouded over from you? So the comparison to Daniel, the Radak just takes it as Daniel was smart, Nebuchadnezzar, and the kings of Babel admired Daniel, and he was just a well-known figure. So the Radak just says, Lefishinot achachmato b'Babel. So that would be an interesting claim, right? It's just, it's Yechezkel using a commonly known metaphor in Babel. So underlying that, there would be a whole bunch of questions. Does that mean Yechezkel is the one to provide the metaphor, or that the Nevuah came with that metaphor to Daniel, and it came with it because Yechezkel is speaking in Babel? Of course, theoretically, Yechezkel is speaking to the king of Tzor, but it would mean that we understand that the Nevuah is not really going to get to the king of Tzor so fast, and therefore it's reasonable to use a metaphor that's more known, more understandable to the people around Yechezkel, who will hear the Nevuah most directly. But Rashi puts it into a way, it puts it into a context that I think seems more relevant. Rashi says, Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar, if you look in the book of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar wants to make him to a king. He approaches him after he does all of these, after Daniel understands various dreams and interprets them and predicts various things based on his mix of wisdom and insight and inspiration. It's unclear in Daniel how much is Nevuah and how much is wisdom. It's in the book of, it's in Ketuvim, so it's sort of a more of a mix. It's a complicated mix as to how that works, but But he has that Nebuchadnezzar wants to worship him as a god, and Daniel rejects it. So Rashi says that's exactly why Daniel is the metaphor being used here, because Daniel doesn't miss anything, right? He knows everything. He understands everything that's brought to him. And so the king of Tyre isn't even that smart, and yet Daniel understands that it's not all from him, and he doesn't let himself be made into a god, and you do. So, with your wisdom and your insight, you made a big army, you made a lot of money. However, you understand, and you have storehouses full of money. With your wisdom at merchandising and at trade, so you have a lot of wealth, and now you get all haughty with your wealth. This is one of the greatest dangers of wealth. The greatest dangers of wealth is that people assume that it's them doing it, and it's they who created the wealth. And so that's dangerous in a couple of ways. First, dangerous because they then think it's completely their right to decide how to use their money, and whatever they do with their money is their business and not anybody else's business. That's one kind of a danger, because the attitude, the underlying attitude, is a problem. And then aside from that, it's just in general that they walk around thinking that they are the source of their own wealth. They're the ones who made themselves wealthy, and that affects the extent to which they'll take criticism from others, the extent to which they'll assume that others have insight as to how they may or may not want to change the way in which they live their lives, and so on and so on. So it's a danger, it's a religious and spiritual danger, wealth, not only, it can also be a wonderful thing, it can be a wonderful tool to use to bring joy and happiness to other people in the world, and many people use it in that way. So it's not that wealth is an unalloyed evil, and that's what Hashem says. But Hashem says, look at you. You think you're a smart businessman, and maybe he was a smart businessman. Hashem doesn't deny the possibility that there was an input of personal intelligence and shrewdness in Tzor, and the king of Tzor advancing. Meaning maybe the king of Tzor came into a city, started ruling a city that was in an economic downturn, and he came up with the great idea for how to turn it around. He raised interest rates, he lowered interest rates, he restricted trade, he devalued the currency, he raised the value, whatever it is he did. Maybe he did all that stuff. But the problem is to take that then and then to assume that it all comes from him. Pasuk Vav, Lachein Komar Hashem Elohim. Yan Titchat Levavcha Kelev Elohim. Since you did this and you think of yourself as a god and you think so highly of yourself, so what's the reaction that has to be? It has to be the downfall. Lachein So I'm going to bring other nations from far away, and they're going to empty their swords on you, and they're meaning they're going to kill many of you, and they're going to destroy you, and they're going to destroy all of your wisdom and all of your knowledge and all of your things that you did, right? So meaning it's all going to go away. So that is the starkest proof that it wasn't only from you, because somebody else came along. So either it was from you, but then there are other smarter people in the world. But the real message is supposed to be not you weren't smart enough because they caught you. Right? You watch this sometimes. People, when they write, let's say, biographies, or they write stories of certain economic, political figures who have a time in the spotlight and who are very successful for a time, and then it ends. So the way those stories often get written is that it ended because they became somewhat arrogant in their understanding, or they lost sight of what the next step would be. If only they had been able to adapt their thinking, they could have moved on and been influential in the next era as well. That may be true in some cases, but part of the problem also might be just that once you get taken with the fact that your own insight, that in itself might be the flaw. And here that's what's going to happen, because other people are going to come and they're going to destroy Tzor. Pasuk Chet LaShachat Yeriducho, they're going to bring you down to Shachat, which is like the pit, meaning they're going to kill you. Vamata motei chalal b'leiv yamim, you will die the death of a chalal, of somebody killed in war in the middle of the siege. So, so Radak says that you're going to die in motei chalal. Motei is a plural. So the Radak says on motei chalal, he says the reason why it says it in the plural is because you're going to die many deaths, meaning they're going to puncture you many times, like happens in war, where they puncture him many times. And the truth is, somebody who drowns also doesn't die all at once. He sort of gets tossed back and forth in the seas, and he also takes a long time to die. Or, So that's his basic understanding. So here, the thing that I would point out is that if we're talking about, we've been talking about Belev Yamim in the heart of the sea as a metaphor for Tsar as seeing itself as being so vital, and its thing as being its membership in the sea, or its standing in the sea, and its being right out there where all the nations can come to it. So I wonder if here the Kirot Rabot, so first one possibility is the Kirot Rabot could just mean, meaning a lot of deaths, could just mean that the various people within Tsar could die a lot of deaths. But this is mostly directed to the king of Tsar. So here the Radak says lots of punctures or it takes a long time. So I wonder if it doesn't mean that the decline of Tsar and the destruction of Tsar won't necessarily come all at once. It'll be through many, many punctures. And as each puncture comes along, they won't be sensitive to it. They won't understand it because, of course, they're all caught up in how smart they are. So they'll have an economic downturn and they'll say, oh, this is the business cycle. And they'll ignore that. And then they'll have this reduction in their power and they'll ignore it. And they'll see it all and it'll be many wounds. And eventually the wounds will bleed them to the point that they die. Pasuk Tet Ha'amor Tomar Elo Kim Ani. Here you are, you say, I'm a God. Before they kill you, we still say, I'm a God. When you're a person, and they are going to now prove that you're not, that you're not godlike by killing you. You're going to die, not even a dignified death. You're going to die a death of the uncircumcised in the hands of strangers, because I am God. Because Hashem is saying, because this is what is needed for you and for those around you to learn the lesson, is that when somebody sets themselves up as a God, they are directly challenging Hashem, and therefore they are sealing their fate. So now that we predicted the downfall of the king of Tsar and given the reasons for it, so the next piece of it, as we saw with the city of Tsar, is to have a kina about it, is to have a eulogy, an elegy about it. Because the truth is, anybody with the talents to become the king of Tsar and to lift up Tsar as a society could have been a tremendous force for positive and good in the world. So that's, I think, perhaps another part of the idea of Nevi'im doing kinat, what we mean by that they have rachamim. They have rachamim, first of all, just for the general human suffering, but even more so, that if you have a lowly society that never does anything, never goes anywhere, and they are, you know, they 1,000 years after everybody else, they still don't know how to write, they don't have any writing instruments, they don't do anything, they don't have any medicine of any significance, that they still are hunters and gatherers, and they really don't know how to build up society, and they start to suffer something, it's a tragedy. And any person of empathy we'll have compassion over that, we'll try to avert it, and we'll try to stop it once it starts, and we'll be sad over the human suffering involved. But there is a sense in which that suffer, that reaction is worse when it's a society that has managed to advance the human cause in general in remarkable ways. The downfall of such a society has all the same human suffering. It's no worse, the actual human suffering, but the ramifications of that suffering are broader than just the people suffering themselves, and that, I think, that is one of the things that produces kina, because they could have been so much more if only they had a different attitude. V'amar t'lo. So this is what you say in the kina, k'omar Hashem Elokim, ata chontem tochnit malei chokhma uchlil yofi. You were so great. You were the seal, chotem tochnit, the English has it as you were the seal of perfection. You were everything somebody could have wanted. You were full of wisdom and you were full of beauty. You were in the Garden of Eden, meaning Tsor was the Garden of Eden. You had all of the great stones that you could have wanted as jewelry. Odin, Pida, V'yahalom, Tarshish, Shoham, V'yashfes, Apernofech, Uver, Kat, V'zahav, Melechet, Tupecha, Unikavecha, Bach, B'yomhi, Baracha, Konanu. So you had all of these precious stones. I would just notice, I don't know what to do with it, but I would notice that other than the gold, and then they put in the gold, but other than the gold, the other nine stones are stones that were in the Choshen Mishpat, that were in the Urim, that were in the breastplate that the Kohen Gadol wore, and Leshem, Shivo, and Achlama, there are three other stones in the third row of it, are not mentioned here, so it's kind of interesting to watch that. It's also interesting, once you're noticing that in the Choshen Mishpat, in the Kohen Gadol's, in the high priest's breastplate, it was Odin, Pita, Uvareket were in one row. Nofech, Sapir, and Yahalom were in another row. And then Tashish, Shoham, Yashvei were another row. And here they're in that order for reasons that are unclear. Tashish, Shoham, Yashvei are. Now these stones, I can read to you the English of what they say. They're stones. I've seen people who have claimed they know what the stones are, and they have even fake breastplates you can buy in Eretz Yisrael, which have one stone of each of those in it, so you can see what it looked like. So they're stones, carnelian, chrysolite, amethyst, beryl, lapis lazuli, jasper, sapphire, turquoise, emerald, and gold. And they were there, and you had all of this stuff. So pasuk yudalit at keruv mamshach hasokech unetaticha behar kodesh elokim hayita betok avnei eish hitalachta. So at keruv, Rashi thinks at keruv means you were a large bird. I mean, yeah, it's a metaphor, but like a large bird can with its wings spread out over lots of things, and Rashi takes that to mean rule over many nations and many areas. And I gave you a place that was so big you could have. Rashi says, I'm sorry. And it could be Har Hakodesh Elokim Hayita. I gave you a place in the mountain of God. It means that Tzor was given the right to join Shlomo HaMelech in building the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Shlomo HaMelech needs the wood. He turns to the king of Tzor, who cooperates then. So back then they were really on the right side. They were participating and cooperating with the building of the Beit HaMikdash, which is the center of making sure that people in the world understand that there's one God who rules the world, and so was an important part and an important partner in producing that. And in that, Rashi reads it as that you walk through stones of fire. It means that you, and that really became somewhat angel-like, because the kings of Israel, Rashi says, are compared to, not that they're allowed to think of themselves that way, but they are compared to angels of God, and the reason would be because they produce God in the world. They make God's presence known. Not they don't produce God in the world. They produce the knowledge of God in the world. I apologize for that inaccuracy. They produce knowledge of God in the world. So Tzar, at that stage in history, in human history, in Jewish history, was fully on the right side. He was part of us and joining us and being part of us and sharing with us and having a fruitful interaction with us. The Radak thinks that the comparison to a kruv is even more literal than that. It's not just to a strong bird with wide wings. It's to the kruvim who were on top of the Aron, because it says about the kruvim on top of the Aron in the Beit HaMikdash and in the Mishkan, it says that they were covering over, they were misachachim b'chanfehem. They were not shielding, sheltering. Thank you. Sorry. They were sheltering with the Aron with their wings. So here too, the Radak thinks that the metaphor is that Tzor really had the ability to shelter and to be covering over things and helping things go along. Also with Harakodesh, and he brings back, and he also with the same thing with the cooperation with Shlomo Melech. So that's what could have been. That's what started out to be. Pasuk 15, Pasuk 10 Vav, Tamim Atah Bidrachecha Miyom Hiparach, at the time that you were created, you were walking the right path. Ad Nimstav Latabach, but then you went astray. And the point of stressing that, Nevi'im do it to the Jewish people as well, is somebody's created, never knows the right thing, never knows what to do, and maybe that we expect them to learn it on their own anyway. Right? It's not necessarily true that if somebody grows up in a household where all they see is abuse and neglect and immorality, and then they grow up and they become abusive and neglectful and immoral, it's not necessarily true that we in society say, well, that's fine because you didn't know. Some segments of society might argue that we should say, well, there's no way he could have known, we can't blame him or her for it. It's not clear to me that the Naveen would do that, but the stress is that if you grow up in an environment and you are raised in an environment where you absolutely know what's right and what's wrong, and then you go off and do the wrong, that's clearly worse. Whatever the status of the first person would be, this is much worse, and that's what's going on here in this pasuk with Tzor. The fact that they originally joined with Shlomo HaMelech in building Beit HaMikdash should have meant that they absorbed the same lessons about HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Jews were supposed to absorb, and therefore when they go off and they sin and they become too taken with themselves, it is a tremendous downfall. Pasuk Ted Zayin, Barob Rechulatcha Malu Tochecha Chamas V'Atechatam Achalelcha Mehar Elokim V'Abedcha Keruv Asochech. So what happened was you get all caught up in your business and your merchandising. And so the Radak says on that, on the Pasuk says that you had so much schora going on that they filled you with chamas, with the lawlessness and your sin. And then the end of the pasuk is, and Hashem says, so you're no longer going to be able to be part of Har Elokim, and you're going to get destroyed. This, you were this sheltering crow or the sheltering bird, and you're not going to be able to be that anymore. But the beginning part of it, the Red X, is a very interesting thing. He says that there was a lot of lawlessness inside of you, but there was so much business going on that the merchant, the various merchants were doing, were cheating people who came along, and you said to yourself, the Radak says, you said to yourself that there's so much fame of the city, and it's so much the center of commerce, that nobody will care, and they won't stop coming, they'll still come. So that's an interesting thing, right? If you could imagine a place that has such a huge economy, if there were such a place that such a huge economy had, you know, a billion people in it, and so there was clearly so many ways to make money, they might say to themselves, well, we don't need to worry about whether or not we're following laws, because people will come anyway, no matter what we do, they're going to come and want to do business with us because we're just too much a source of wealth for them. So Hashem is saying that's what you thought, and that's why, that's part of what your downfall is coming from. So Pasuk Yudzayin, Gavad Lipcha Biyafiyacha, Shichata Chokmatecha Al Yifatecha Al Eretz Yishlachticha Lifnei Melachim Yishlachticha L'Re'a Vavach. So because you got so taken with yourself because of how beautiful you were, how much they wanted, they would need to want to be part of you. So your wisdom, you turn your wisdom for the sake of making money, for the sake of all these things, and therefore Hashem is going to kick them out and take it all away from them so they can learn their lesson. Pasuk Yud Chet. Mirova Vonecha Ba'ave Be'evel Ruchulatcha Chilat Mikdashecha Votse Eish Mitorcha Hiachalatcha Vatelcha Lefer Al Haaret Le'nikol Roecha. So because of all these sins, because of all the sins of your, of what you did in business, you profaned your sanctuary, meaning not your mikdashim as in your places, but in the your status as a special, as a special place, as a special nation, and therefore I'm going to take fire out from among you, and it's going to eat you up, and it's going to turn you into ashes on the ground in front of everybody who sees you. So this Vatzei Eish Mitochacha is interesting because it might suggest that the downfall of Tzor starts out, it's going to start out from inside of it. Whether the whole thing will be there from there, it's not so clear, but right, it'll come. I'm sorry, but the Radak is the other way. The Radak is that it's not about Tzi'esh Mitochacha, I'm going to bring fire out from you, but Tzi'esh, Rashi says what Tzi'esh is the words of haughtiness that you said, and those will be what brings you downfall. That's like what I said, and the Radak says it the other way, that I'm going to, Eish is here a metaphor for sin. I'm going to remove the sin from among you by destroying you. It's going to be a burning process to burn off what's wrong with you. Pasuk Yutet, Kol Yodecha, Ba'amim Shamu Alecha, Balahot Hayita Reincha Adolam. Everybody's gonna look at you and they're gonna be shocked at what happened to Tzor, because Tzor was once upon a time this great, great city, and it's gonna fall so much that it's gonna be astounding to people around them. So just Avos Rabbi Natan comments that there are various things that are called Malay, full. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is one. And Yehoshua is called Malay. He's called Malay Ruach Chachma. He's filled with the spirit of wisdom. And Kalev is, it says Vayim Malay Acharei, that he fully went after Hashem. Bezalel says Vayim Malay Oto Ruach Elokim. He was filled with the spirit of God. Aholiyav says Malay Mileo Tam Chachmat Lev. And then Chiram is put in. He's also called Malay because he's called Malay Chachma. So that grouping shows what Chiram's, what the king of Tzor's, or the king of Tzor's potential had been, and therefore why the downfall is going to be so horrifying to those around them. It's a city and a place and a king who could have really who were for a time and could have continued to be the leaders of the free world, and then they wasted that potential, and that's what's going on here. Pazukhov turns his attention, and they'll do these fairly quickly. Pazukhov turns his attention to the king, to a new place. We're done with Tzor and the tragedy of Tzor, and now we go to Tzidon, which is nearby. Ben Adam Simpanecha Tzidon. Now you're going to give a prophecy to Tzidon. Tzidon. So this is much more of the previous model. It's that Hashem is going to punish Tzidon, and the punishment itself and the harshness of the punishment is going to let them know that Hashem is God when he punishes them, and he'll become Minikdash Diba, he'll be sanctified by those punishments. And by sanctified here we mean that people will come to fully understand and be aware of Hashem's power and presence in the world. Pasuk Chav Gimel, Vishilach Divach Deve, Verdam Bechutotel. There will be pestilence and blood, meaning death, in its outskirts. Niflal chalal betochan, there will be death within it. Becherev aleha saviv, when misaviv, when the sword comes against it from all around. V'yadukin Hashem, and back to that refrain, they will know that I'm God. So we didn't have that refrain so much in Tzor, as we noted, because in Tzor, I think the point is that in Tzor, it's not even necessarily going to be possible. They were so caught up in their vision of themselves, it's not clear that they could ever come to learn the lesson they needed to learn, but in case of Tzidon, it's not true. So that when the punishments come, they could have the opportunity, they could take the opportunity to realize that it's Hashem. And then Tzor will no longer be Silon Mamir v'kotz machiv. So the JPS English has it as prickling briars and lacerating thorns. Mikol suvivotam, from all around them. Hashatim otam, who hate them. V'yadukini Hashem Elokim. And they'll know that I am Hashem Elokim, the ruler of the universe, the ruler of the world. But that metaphor is worth paying attention to. Part of what we obsess about Sidon, even if they're not a leading nation, but they're like a prickling briar. Like when every time you come across them, they sort of prick at you. And so if they claim consistently that the Jews don't have a special God, the Jews aren't special, so we don't necessarily have to believe them every time we come across them, but yet, that is an important part of the Jews' experience of themselves, and that sort of takes away from their confidence that they are in fact an Am Hashem, and that there is Hashem Elokim who runs the world, and all of those kinds of things. And so that's what the destruction of Tzidon will help the Jews do. It will take away that irritant of somebody consistently saying, or repeatedly saying, you're not so special, you're not so different. When I gather the Jews back together from wherever they've been scattered, and I will be sanctified through them in front of all the nations. And they'll be again residing in their land that they given to that I gave to Yaakov. And they'll live there with security. And they'll build houses, and they'll plant vineyards, and they'll live there securely. When I punish all of those around them who hated them, who tried to hurt them, and then they'll all know, it's not clear, Viadu, it's unclear whether it's the nations around them. That has been true until now, but here might be that the Jews themselves will know. So, I think it's, as somebody who tries to claim to be a Zionist and think about Zionism, it's interesting to watch. If we think about Shivat Zion that we see, so has this puzzle come true yet? The Jews aren't fully Levetach Parzotam, although many, many of the Jews are. That's the question. Is Yechezkel promising here that every single Jew living in Eretz Israel, including those in Sderot and Ashkelon and those in the north, won't have to worry about anything? They'll Yeshuv Levetach? Or is the fact that a large percentage of the Jews live Levetach? So certainly in times when there's not Levetach, even in Yerushalayim, even in the inner cities, even in Tel Aviv, when there are, Rachman al-Itzlan, God forbid, people blowing themselves up and killing people, so that wasn't a time for sure when this puzzle was coming true, but at a time when a greater percentage, or has it not yet come true, and if it has not yet come true, then we can look forward to the time when this will come true, not only the Yeshu Levetach, but also that everybody, that widely among the Jews and among the non-Jews, V'yadu K'nishim Elokehem, that we will all know that Hashem is the Jewish God, the God for the Jews, and the God really for the entire universe. Have a great day.